Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I know, and we all know from Joy Reid that a crime is down and migrant crime. What are you talking about?
I will note for our audience that overall crime is down this year across this country, and migrant crime is negligible. Crime by migrants is negligible.
A good example of the negligible crime is police in Ohio who arrested a 43-year-old illegal alien from Honduras who kidnapped a 15-year-old girl.
Please tell me she's okay.
Warrants for first-degree felony kidnapping, third-degree felony unlawful sexual conduct with a minor, fourth-degree felony gross sexual imposition, and first-degree misdemeanor interference with custody. He kidnapped, sexually assaulted a young girl who was brought into this country by his girlfriend.
Oh, how convenient.
So that's the negligible,
young one. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The negligible crime that we're talking about. That's another good example. There are many. County sheriffs, local sheriffs, starting to talk a little bit more about this, which is helpful. Where's Tom Darpin? He's a local sheriff.
Yeah, he is. I don't know. He's like saving a puppy mills or something. I don't know.
You know, any other sheriffs in Illinois? We're going to have to circle the infield and ask about that. Jim Mendrick, he's a DuPage County sheriff. He's a local sheriff. Anybody have any? There's been burglary rings in Oak Brook. I mean, I know Oak Brook police have interceded with respect to these burglary rings of Venezuelan migrants. We've seen them in Lake County, too. Any county sheriffs want to weigh in on this?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro. Answer line, you could also reach us on our text line, which is now up and running, 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
And I'm not putting this necessarily on county sheriffs because it's sort of interesting what Oconee County, Georgia Sheriff James Hale had to say about the locals and their interaction with ICE. Remember, Georgia, unlike Illinois, is a state that prohibits sanctuary jurisdictions. You shall cooperate with federal law enforcement effectively, even though that's not how it actually worked out.
In Athens, no.
Right. And that's certainly not the attitude of certain mayors, like the mayor of Athens, Georgia, of course, talking about the Lake and Riley case. But listen to what Hale had to say about some of the issues when it comes to local law enforcement arresting a person in this country illegally and then interacting with ICE.
My understanding from my jail commander is if it's a misdemeanor charge that they have with us and ICE, you know, puts a hit on them, that if it's a misdemeanor, ICE won't come get them.
So they'll be in the jail for 48 hours.
Or they bond out before the 48 hours and we let them go because ICE tells us they're not coming to get them.
Is the process frustrating?
It is to a certain extent because, you know, they're, especially in something like the case with Lincoln Riley, you know, you have that undocumented person and everybody assumes that law enforcement dropped the ball on that. And in practicality, the local law enforcement didn't really drop the ball on it.
Well, it's an interesting perspective. And, you know, then you have to hear from ICE on this, too, about, you know, misdemeanor, I understand, but the exact nature of the misdemeanor, context, in other words, what kind of criminal background are we talking about with a person here illegally who's been charged with a misdemeanor? And then on the other side, you have to fold in the prosecutor's office. Are you undercharging? Are you charging a misdemeanor that should be charged or could be charged as a felony? And particularly if we're talking about a person in this country illegally, you err on the side of charging of a felony if it's legitimate to do so. so that you get the attention of ICE, and ICE is put on the on notice that they need to come and take this person. You know, I mean, so, just like we talk about the criminal justice system domestically, we have to talk about the prosecutor's office, and we have to talk about the police, and we have to talk about the judges. You have to talk about federal law and state and local law enforcement and their interactions too. The sort of the additional layer of the criminal justice system when you're talking about the feds and these specific agencies with specific duties.
What about the Lake and Riley Act? I mean, you had 37 Democrats vote with Republicans on it. Where is that going? Because that says that if you are arrested on a felony charge, you will be handed over to ICE.
Well, that's not going anywhere in the Senate because Pagliacci Schumer and the Democrats are in charge.
Okay.
So you can expect that will
die a slow death.
Well, it will be. It's something that is pending the outcome of the November election is what I would say. And it's something that should be included in the discussion about the November election. You want to see federal legislation along the lines of the Lake and Riley Act, then you need to put Republicans in charge of both chambers and obviously the White House.
I got to tell you, I went to dinner with my friend who's from Serbia, and my friend from Argentina that are both now American citizens. They're telling they had to wait 8 years to get a green card. And the other one had to wait 6 years. They are fed up. They were kind of on the fence about Trump, and now they're like, Trump is my president, because they can't stand what they're seeing. They can't stand that their tax dollars are going to feed and clothe people who don't respect America. I mean, from leaving garbage on the beach to throwing garbage out the windows, how'd they get a car in the first place, too? And then my friend's husband, he hires day laborers, and he said he has never seen one Venezuelan. He sees Ecuadorians. He sees people from the Congo. He said people from all over. I have yet to meet one Venezuelan who wants to work a day for me.
Well, Palm Beach County, Florida Sheriff Rick Bradshaw went off, too. He went off because in Palm Beach County, they just arrested three people from Guatemala here illegally for kidnapping and sexual assault of a woman. And here's sort of his review of the situation locally and nationally.
Well, this morning, I'm just here to deliver a message. And the message is, don't think for a minute that what happens at the Mexican border doesn't affect us here. Here you have three illegals that should have never been in this country that have committed a very serious crime, kidnapping and sexual battery of a lady. They shouldn't be here. This is the same thing that we saw where the student was killed by the person that was here illegally. That's why we pay so much attention. Folks, our border is the ocean. There's no fence there. We are the fence. That's why we spend as much time as we do and dedicate resources to stopping people before they get here. In all likelihood, these three people came through Mexico. They didn't come through here. I can tell you that for sure. We would check in our database. But for them to be in this country, to be able to commit these type of crimes, is unconscionable. The federal government has put the American people in jeopardy. Our intelligence section, who works very closely with the FBI, has also identified that the most dangerous gangs in the world are now in Miami from Venezuela. They make MS-13 look like school kids. Ooh. They're not going to stay just in Miami. They're going to go where they need to go to do what they do. They don't know if it's Dade, Broward, Palm Beach County. They just go to do what they're going to do, and we're going to have to deal with them. You know, forget about the 3 million people that came across the border, put their hands up to Border Patrol and says, I give up. You know, they get the cell phone and the gift card and all that kind of garbage. Yep. What about the 1.5 million people that they call gotaways? Those are the people that don't want to go to get caught by Border Patrol because they're cartel, they're gang members, they're wanted, they're packing fentanyl. I watched a surveillance video that was taken down in Texas of 10 guys, military age, dressed in camouflage, backpacks, they had carpet on their shoes so they didn't leave footprints.
Oh my God.
In a military formation coming into the country. What do you think they're here for? They're not here to play the lotto. They're going to do bad things. So the director of the FBI testified that it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when we're going to have something bad happen here. Because in the 1.5 million gotaways, he's worried that there's people from ISIS, people from the terrorist watch list that could be in the United States.
So where's the sheriff here in Chicagoland, in Illinois, to say, listen up, the people that are here, those gotaways that Palm Beach County Sheriff Rick Bradshaw is talking about, the people that Christopher Wray is talking about, you know, for you leftists, your vaunted, your new vaunted FBI, because they're doing your political bidding. Chris Wray, traffickers that are connected to ISIS. They don't. Where's the message? The same message from Tom Darth that Rick Bradshaw just delivered, or from a suburban county, a Collar County mayor,
and especially
a Collar County sheriff. They don't know, and they don't care about your imaginary borders, Cook County to DuPage County, to Lake County, all of the metropolitan area in particular. I mean, in general, entire states, the entire country, but just thinking about the metropolitan area where there's concentration.
Well, especially Sheriff Dark, because he has been an advocate and had several press conferences about human trafficking and how to stop human trafficking. Well, human trafficking is happening because we have an unsecure border. So where is he on that issue? At the very least, come on.
You express general opposition to human trafficking, but if it necessarily implicates border security, well, I don't want to talk about that. Well, that's Tom Dart's position. I have some puppies to go save. Bring the cameras and follow me. And the Cook County residents, getting fewer and fewer, by the way, some new census data out. They're satisfied with that. Okay. Collar County residents, you're satisfied with that. Okay. Fine.
I mean, people that are here are using us. Don't you get it?
In other states, just so people may perk their ears up, and you may share this information with people who are head in the sand in your circles of influence. Other states, you hear from law enforcement. You get details. They are on watch. They are communicating, and as well as acting. On your behalf or on their constituents' behalf in places like Georgia and Florida. Not here, and that's fine, because that's what we want. But in other states, it's different. I just thought you should know.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer. On AM 560, The Answer.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So, I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630, and learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Just a postscript on the conversation we were having before Mike Scott's newscast on Cook County and the Collar Counties here versus some other counties around the country. Palm Beach County, Florida. Oconee County, Georgia. Where sheriffs are starting to pipe up about what open borders means for their communities, their constituents, their job to provide public safety. In Cook County, this is not exactly related, but it tells you something about the mentality here, as if you didn't need it. As I say, the problem with Chicagoland is not the dead voting, it's the living dead who vote. Stephanie Sikora. This is a Tony Preckwinkle appointee, I guess. She's been, or her appointment has been proposed for the Cook County Commission on Women's Issues.
Oh, God. And we really need that right now, Dan.
Stephanie Sikora, I'm going to use her description of herself, is a stone-top, hard femme, trans lesbian, and working-class anti-Zionist Ashkenazi Jew.
Okay.
So I guess, wait, and by the way, she is a dead ringer for Ray Nitschke. For those
now
Packers fans out there.
Okay.
So I guess, wait, maybe I... Stone-top, hard femme, trans lesbian. So that... So maybe, oh wait, does that mean that Stephanie is a dude pretending to be a woman who likes women? I think that's what that means.
No,
so
you sum that up very well.
So this is a dude. This isn't a woman. Okay, all right. I mean, it literally, when you see, I don't know, Stephanie, you sort of presume, even though, as I said, Stephanie looks like Ray Nitschke. No offense to Packers fans. Here's a little bit more of Stephanie on Stephanie. If you're not in solidarity with the Palestinian people, a firm opponent of Zionism, and know that the safety and liberation of global Jewry will come through the collective struggle, mutual aid, and revolution, not through settler colonial states and police violence, then we might not like each other very much.
Okay.
Sounds like something Chuck Schumer might say. I'm a police and prison abolitionist, which is pretty self-explanatory. F-12, F the police. Yes, that means you're a cop relative, too. If you read the guide and can't tell that I hate cops, you might need to work on your reading comprehension. I'm an anarchist and come to my anarchism through my solidarity with Black and Palestinian people and through the frequently misplaced but never lost tradition of religious anarchism among Ashkenazi Jews. Anarchist beliefs are central to how I observe my religion and live my politics. Well, you're in luck, Cook County ladies, because Stephanie is going to be looking after your issues.
I think Stephanie is a little self-absorbed and is just going to be looking after Stephanie. I don't think she cares
self,
about women.
Self-absorbed is what you
woman.
Took away.
No,
self-absorbed is what you took away
no,
from
I'm
that.
Just, and she does look like Ray Nitschke.
So it just gives you just an insight into the people that are being elevated by your duly elected leaders, what that tells you. So defund the police. They don't say it out loud as much anymore, but it's still very prevalent. It's still what they believe. Just you know, cluing some people in, because I guess if you're not being beat about the head and neck area with something in Cook County, then you just sort of forget it exists and pretend it doesn't anymore.
How hypocritical. I mean, what does a guy know about women's issues, really?
What does Cook County know about women's issues? Why is there a commission on women's issues? Well,
exactly.
I mean, the layers of absurdity are multiple. But that's always here.
Isn't this International Women's Month or something? You guys, where's my flowers and my cards?
We don't observe Bolshevik holidays or months. Ridiculous.
I know.
But I know a lot of people do. They just fold right in. Well, it's Women's Day. It's Women's Day. It's this. It's that.
Wear purple on Friday at CPS schools in honor of women's rights.
Yeah,
Day.
Exactly.
Wait, we're being suppressed. I didn't know about that. Can somebody fill me in?
Continue celebrating your participation in the demise of a free nation. Wonderful. It's an exciting time. All right. So, as I mentioned, Aaron Rodgers is reported to be like a shortlister for RFK Jr.'s VP pick, which is a conversation unto itself. And all of a sudden,
the left has lost its mind again.
All of a sudden, CNN reporter remembers a conversation that she had with Aaron Rodgers at a Kentucky Derby event, party, I presume, more than a decade ago. And Jake Tapper breathlessly reports it, you know, being the intrepid, serious journalist that he pretends to be.
In 2013, when CNN's Pamela Brown was covering the Kentucky Derby, she was introduced to Rodgers. Hearing that she was a journalist at CNN, Rodgers began attacking the news media for, quote, covering up important stories. Rogers then brought up the Sandy Hook shooting and said the news media was intentionally ignoring that the shooting wasn't real, that it was a government inside job. I remind you, the shooting, of course, was very real, very tragic. 20 children and 6 adults were murdered that day. When Pamela Brown asked Aaron Rodgers for evidence of what he was talking about, Rodgers then began sharing various theories that have been disproven numerous times by evidence. Rodgers falsely claimed to Pamela Brown that there were men in black in the woods by the school, and he asked if she thought that was odd. Brown says that she found the entire encounter disturbing.
So disturbing, she waited 11 years to report it. She waited for the week that Rodgers is being leveled up as a possible VP running mate for an independent presidential candidate to report it. And the substantiation is what? Well, I mean, if you can't trust Pamela Jones at CNN, I mean, who can you trust? That's good enough.
They could have brought it up after he, you know, had a career-ending injury. They could have brought it up when he broke up with his latest girlfriend. I mean, but now they're choosing this is the time to bring it up. And I don't even think it's true. She heard something at a derby party 10 years ago?
Rodgers rejected it out of hand. He went on Twitter or X and said, basically, it's total nonsense. And I never said anything like that. And I don't believe that. And, I continue to wish the best for those families that were impacted by a loved one being murdered on that day.
Yeah, but it's out there, so where does he go to get his reputation back? I mean, people just hear that and they don't think, or they're too lazy to get his side of the story.
Additionally, you had Rodgers, if you remember, at the time or shortly thereafter that horrific massacre occurred, NFL players wore the initials for the Sandy Hook Elementary School on their helmets. And there's a picture with Aaron Rodgers wearing that same, having that same logo sticker on his helmet after that that mass shooting. But CNN reported it anyway. So I can't believe that this is like Rodgers is actually being considered, but he is being considered.
Right.
And it's pretty clear that RFK Jr.'s presence in the race helps Trump. So, I mean, you have to factor that in. Well, why would they care about Rodgers? Because why would they care about RFK Jr.? Well, because the polling is pretty clear on this, that RFK Jr. is mostly taking votes away from Joe Biden. And RFK Jr., by the way, this is not just rumor and innuendo, because RFK Jr. was asked about Rodgers as a potential running mate by Trace Gallagher on Fox, and he had a lot of laudatory things to say about one Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah. Meantime, you have already made your choice on who your running mate will be, and we know that Aaron Rodgers, the quarterback for the New York Jets, formerly of the Green Bay Packers, is a prominent name in that. Why?
Well, he's one of the people that we've talked to. I really like Aaron because, you know, our appeal is to young people. We're trying to make sure that young people are participating in the political process, that they have hope for America. We want somebody, the people who have run up the $34 trillion debt, which they're dumping on that generation, are all older people. And we want somebody young who's going to look out for that generation. Mm-hmm. Aaron Rodgers is battle-tested. He's stood up. He's been hammered by the press. Stood up for things we believed, and I like that part of his character. He's a critical thinker, and I think we need that at the time, as you know, the rise of AI. We need people who understand that you cannot always trust authority. Just because somebody's in charge, it doesn't mean that they're telling you the truth, and we want somebody who's going to critically examine. My father used to say, one of the duties of living as a citizen of democracy is to maintain a constant posture of skepticism toward authority. And I think Aaron's shown that. He's also somebody who I think will help me get the country healthy again. Yep. He's 40 years old. He's focused on his own health. He's very aware of health issues, and you know, that's one of the things I'm gonna. That's one of the key parts of my agenda is to get the country healthy again.
It sounds to me like Aaron Rodgers is the choice. Is your choice? Is he your vice presidential choice?
We're announcing my choice on the 26th of this month, so 2 weeks from today, in Oakland. If you want to find out who my choice is, you need to come to that.
Might as well just let us know right here because you've got the time, the space, I think.
Right. Nice try, Trace.
Trace, thanks for having me.
Appreciate your time so much.
It does sound like that Rodgers is his running mate, doesn't it?
It sure does. And again, he's making the announcement in Oakland, California. Hello.
I mean, that would be wild.
That would be wild.
And if Rodgers... So when Rodgers has to go to practice or play on Sunday, is Pat McAfee going to fill in for Rodgers as RFK Jr.'s running mate?
We need backup VP. Jason gets injured.
This is getting as wild as you thought this cycle was going to be. Good. It may be more wild.
But I'm watching CNN right now. Now they're now they're telling the other side of the story, what Aaron Rodgers had to say. Shame on them. Pamela Brown, what is wrong with them? They're such tryhards, you know what I mean?
Joe in Naperville.
Yeah, I got a great idea for that trans thing that's going to take care of the women's rights in Chicago. Yeah. I think she should get all the guns that they confiscate from the criminals and get free conceal and carry for every single woman in Chicago. I think that would advance women's rights in Chicago more than anything this administration could do.
What do you think about Aaron Rodgers?
I think it's smoke and mirrors.
All right. Thanks for the call, Joe. I mean, this celebrity-addled culture. I don't think RFK and Aaron Rodgers, RFK and fill in the blank, are going to pose any real threat to win the presidency. But I'm just talking about the impact, both political and cultural.
And then I love it. I love Twitter or X because they have video or an audio of Aaron Rodgers from 10 years ago. When he commented, he called into the local Fox 6 station in Wisconsin and talked about how we can learn from this tragedy and look for signs more now than ever to keep this from happening again. So was he a denier? I don't think he'd be in a denier if he called into a TV station and made that comment. Pamela Brown from CNN.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do your homework. They're so lazy.
Maybe she has him confused with Alex Jones. But I don't know if Alex Jones would have been at a derby party in 2013. George in Naperville.
Yeah, Dan, I respect Aaron Rodgers for taking a stand that we should be in charge of our own health decisions when that wasn't popular, and he took a lot of heat for that.
Yeah, I agree. We played those clips during the lockdown era, and there's no question about it. I mean, you know, he's a little bit... granola-y, you know, a little ethereal.
Northern California.
So it's the same. It's the sort of same thing. Like, you know, there's some
hippie
positive attributes to RFK Jr. and some utility in his campaign, but it's pretty limited. And that's sort of the same thing I would say about Rodgers in a political context. He's done some good things. Seems like I agree with RFK Jr. Seems like he's a critical thinker. He's an independent thinker. Those are both good qualities. He did stand up and he took the heat. And I like that he gives back to, you know, calling Travis Kelce Mr. COVID. But I mean, in terms of the political upside, if you believe in free minds and free markets, there's probably political upside with these two. And I think they're adding to the effort to protect free minds and free speech, free expression, a free press in this country. Free markets, that's where it gets a little dicey. And even on some of the individual liberties questions, you know, RFK Jr. is terrible on guns and the right of the law-abiding to protect themselves. And I haven't heard any 180 on that topic. So it's interesting. There is some value, but I think it's limited. Rich, Indian Head Park.
Hey, good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. Don't you think that Aaron Rodgers has a lawsuit against CNN for defamation? Mm-hmm. I mean, look at all these other people that filed defamation lawsuits, and they really have nothing to hang their hat on. And here this guy denied this and was was on the side of banning guns and everything and what happened in Sandy Hook, and now they're bringing this out saying that he said it was a fake.
Yeah,
so I don't know. What do you think?
Thanks for the call. I think actually this case, he does have a possible defamation claim that he could possibly clear the actual malice standard for defamation because of not just the lack of evidence to support the claim made by that Pamela Brown, but also the reckless disregard for the truth exhibited by CNN per that lack of evidence and per existing evidence that they knew or should have known, should have efforted to get, like you just described, like I described with the logo. I actually think he does have a possible claim here if he wanted to pursue it.
Just ask him before you go out with the story. Do some research. But you could reach out to him and say, hey, one of our, you know, I have a producer or even Pamela Brown herself or even maybe Lazy Jake Tapper because, you know, anchors don't want to do more work than they have to besides be newsreaders because that's what they used to be called back in the 60s, by the way. They could have made an effort. They reached out to him on Twitter like, hey, this is what we heard. You know, what's your response before they go with the story? But now everything's like, get it on the air. We got to bash him.
They could have done that, too. And that adds more weight to a possible defamation claim. So I hope he goes the route of Nick Sandman and that the kid who wore the Chiefs gear, blanking on his name now, but you know who I'm talking about. I hope, you know, follow suit. I mean, enough of these. If CNN defames enough people, at some point they're going to be out of business. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today, 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Advil. Advil is getting into, well, I'm sure they've been in for a long time, like the rest of corporate America. They're getting into the race hustling business, the dye business. As Larry Fink said, you know, CEO of BlackRock, you know, big companies are either going to do this or we're going to impose it upon them. Seems like most of them are pretty excited to do it. Says a lot about the corporate culture in these places. They have launched the, quote, Pain Equity Project.
What does that even mean, again?
Pain equity. Well,
pain equity, okay. Pain is pain.
People, the Advil people thought there might be some that were confused, so they put together a little infomercial, you know, featuring one of these paid shills pretending to be Oprah and doing like a little daytime talk show so that people can, most of America, the Americans that they want to get to, like the audience of The View or Oprah, that are basically brain dead. They just have like can't between their ears that they repeat on cue so that they could follow along and then repeat what they're told to repeat. In point of fact, this doctor you're about to hear interviewed, she could have just as easily been in the audience She certainly fits the description I just offered of said audience. The Advil Pain Equity Project. Believe my pain, America.
Welcome to Believe My Pain, a discussion about systemic pain bias in healthcare. I want to thank all of you and all of you for joining me today as we talk about this very important issue. I also want to thank the Pain Equity Project developed by Advil in partnership with the Morehouse School of Medicine and Black Health for inviting us to be a part of their commitment to addressing pain bias in Black communities. All right, let's get right into it with our first topic, the reality of pain inequity. Pain equity is achieved when everyone is treated equally regardless of their age, race, ethnicity, gender, or socioeconomic status, and receives the highest quality pain care and management. Okay, so Dr. Uchi, you have written this book, Legacy, A Black Physician Reckons with Racism in Medicine. You are a legacy Black female physician, and you are armed with expertise that frames this issue around Black pain in such a clear way. And so I'm so glad that you're here today. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here to talk to you about this issue that means so much to me and impacts so many members of our community, and we'll hear those stories today.
All right. So, Dr. Uche, could you just outline what are some of the myths about Black people in pain?
So I think the main thing is that health professionals think that Black people are biologically different than other people, that our skin is thicker, that we have less sensitive skin and higher pain tolerance. And that is all absolutely false. There is no difference between Black patients and patients of other races.
Wow. So what do you think has perpetuated these myths?
The legacy of slavery in this country, I think the interpersonal and systemic racism that still exists in this country, and that is embedded into the institution of medicine and healthcare. Mm-hmm. You know, our health professionals, most want to do a good job and care for their patients, mm-hmm. but unfortunately we're seeing, you know, implicit bias that they are not listening to their patients, they're not responding to their patients' concerns, and sometimes even ignoring their patients.
I know, like you, probably need a morphine drip after hearing that.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. I'm not buying Advil ever again, because they're claiming that Black people suffer more pain on average compared to white people, and that it's time for pain equity.
The claim by the doctor that health professionals believe that Black people have thicker skin and lower pain tolerances than other people.
What is that bull jive?
I'd love to hear from a healthcare professional. I've never heard that statement in my life.
Me neither.
I've never heard that claim in my life. And the idea that she, I mean, the best part of that little vignette, the little role-playing game they did there, they believe that Black people have thicker skin and have higher pain tolerances, and that's not true. Wow. You just blew my mind. That's not true? that Black people, white people, other people are the same biologically? That this is a revolutionary idea? Does anybody think anything differently? I've never heard somebody say
never.
Black people have thicker skin or have lower pain lower pain tolerances, I guess. I guess the myth is they have thicker skin and higher pain tolerances, right. And that's not true. I've never heard a person say that ever. Or claim that
pain is racist.
That somebody is saying that. Well, the pain is racist because you're. I mean, the argument that's being made clearly is that you're treating them as they're somehow biologically different creatures than white creatures. And I mean, it's just completely made up. I mean, I can't even believe that Advil would sponsor something so ridiculous. But then again, this is 2024 America and corporate America. And of course, I can believe it. And that doctors won't do the tests that I want them to do because they don't believe me because of their implicit bias against black people and their implicit belief that black people have higher pain tolerances. So they want to order the tests. Give me the prescriptions that I want. So they come out, they cook up all these statistics about, as you see in this infomercial, 83% of blacks report this and 74% of blacks report that with respect to tests or medications or treatment from a physician. It is just totally fabricated. It's the most insane thing. One of the most insane things I've heard in an era where insanity is routine.
Must be an election year. White people bad, Trump bad.
They're running out of angles to maintain this hustle. And so they've got to invent ever new and exciting ones. And by the way, I mean, this is throughout medicine, as we've talked about, as a former, I think he was at Columbia, Stanley Goldfarb is a dean there, but has been writing about in the Wall Street Journal for years about this dye, this race hustling ideology creeping into the med schools like it's creeped into every other crevice in American culture. Pharmacists in California, they're required to complete a woke course, dye course. The course includes a list of people that are automatically guilty of privilege. And if you're privileged, then you're guilty of marginalizing less fortunate groups. Here are the people that your pharmacist is being told or has to agree. This is right from the California Pharmacists Association PowerPoint presentation. They post some whistleblower posted the slides on X. So, I mean, it's a usual thing, but I'm just saying, again, pharmacists, in order to be licensed in California, you have to sit through a presentation where these people are privileged, thus they're guilty of marginalizing less fortunate groups, thus we need to take remedial steps. Males, Christians, white people, heterosexuals, non-transgenders, able-bodied people, U.S. citizens. That's a lot of people, U.S. citizens, 330 million. Okay, sure. However ridiculous you think it is, multiply it by 1,000. Paul and Carrie, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, guys. Just an observation with all these tapes that you guys play and recording and stuff. Is voice fry a prerequisite to become part of the dilettante club, like fighting the oppression?
You do have to, you do have to Katy Britt it up a little bit, you know. You have to dramatize it a little bit. You have to feel. You can't just say. You have to express a feeling. Ugh. It hurts. Or I'm so excited. Thank you so much. Da-da-da-da-da-da. The sing-songy, the vapid sing-songy thing, too. Yeah. Like, we're breaking new ground here.
Yeah, breaking new ground.
Diane and Moments.
Hi. Yes, you were talking about the pain differences or something between white and black people, or, well, black and other races. And as a nurse, we were never told that different races have different pain tolerances or skin thicknesses. We were taught to always believe the patient as far as what they say they have when they say they have pain. We also, just like 10 years ago, I mean, they were talking about pain a lot. Believe them, you need to treat pain. And we went through this recently where we were treating pain more, and then everyone was getting in trouble because they said narcotic medications were prescribed too much, and people were getting hooked on that. So I don't know. It just goes back and forth, it seems like to me.
Yeah, well, if a if a white person wants heroin, you say no. If a black person wants heroin to cure the pain, then you say yes. You just say, the answer is just yes, apparently. And if you don't say yes to a patient who's part of a marginalized community, in this case, Advil is specifically focusing on black people whose pain is not being believed because the medical profession is racist and suffers from implicit bias, then not being an ally.
Right. And Dan, here's the 15-second commercial that's running on the airwaves, you know, on cable TV, regular TV.
Believe me when I say
I'm in pain.
And it's different black people.
Believe me when I say.
And believe me when I say.
My pain is real.
And then there's this Advil.
Nick in Addison. Or maybe it's Edison Park. Give me Nick in Edison Park.
Thank you. Oh, maybe. Hi, Nick.
Hi. The commercial you played about African American pain, that was a skit from Portlandia, right? That wasn't real, was it?
No, it's real, Nick.
I wish I could say it was a skit, Nick, but alas. After that piece, I need two Advil, but maybe I'll go with aspirin instead. Carol in Moments. Give me Carol in Moments.
Hi, good morning. I remember when this whole thing about nobody should have pain. Nobody should be in pain. This is, I believe, back in the 80s. The drug companies printed it out. They encouraged hospitals, probably financially, to make sure that everybody got prescribed lots of pain medication. There were doctors who did not agree with that because, after all, you're getting your guts cut open. You're going to have pain. And, we did our best to control it. But then they wanted all this narcotics, even once they were discharged, they're going to have this and that. Well, they became addicts. Women going for minor dental procedures, and they end up hooked on Norco. All this is you're going to have more addicts out there on prescription medication.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Carl. Yeah, we're all familiar with what happened with the opioid industry. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Dan and Amy, we're talking about Advil making this evidence-free claim. There is a systemic racist belief among health professionals that black people have thicker skin and a higher tolerance for pain than others, and something that must be done about that immediately. The Race Equity Project, Believe My Pain. Chris, downtown, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm an orthopedic surgeon here in the Chicago area. Been practicing for over 20 years. I've never seen a difference in pain tolerance based on race or sex. There are certain individuals that may have a very high pain tolerance and some with a low pain tolerance. Sometimes you see that from a cultural perspective. Some tolerate pain more than others, but never as a result of race and sex.
Well,
I don't believe that statement.
Have you ever heard that before?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think anybody believes it. I don't think anybody's ever heard anybody say that until Advil's little production.
Yeah, I've talked to all my partners over the years and other physicians. Never heard that. Never heard that.
Thanks for the call, Chris.
Making stuff up. All right.
No. Hold on. I got another one. From a dental standpoint, three things in dentistry. One, a person in pain because of a toothache doesn't have a color, a race, or an ethnicity. They just have a bad tooth. And there's nothing like tooth pain, as we all know. Second, the best pain reliever for dental tooth pain has been proven to be 3 ibuprofen along with 2 Tylenol. Now, I say ibuprofen because what I normally say is Advil, like I said, Tylenol. Advil, Tylenol, Kleenex, you say the brand name as opposed to the product itself. From now on, I'm going to tell my patients to take 3 ibuprofen, generic if possible, along with 2 acetaminophen.
Now they'll say, like, what's that? Acetaminophen? Then they say Tylenol.
And third, in Illinois this year for our licensure, we're required to take a DEI class. So we make sure that we treat our patients equally too. So of course it's come to Illinois. We knew if it was pharmacists in California, it'd be dentists and every other medical profession in Illinois, so that you can be told not to believe things that you don't believe and that you've never heard anybody express a belief in. So productive.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Kamala Harris, she's the vice president. No, seriously. She's out on the campaign trail again, and you know what that means.
Deep thoughts.
And now, deep thoughts.
Kamala Harris at an abortion mill in Minnesota.
So everyone get ready for the language. Uterus. That part of the body needs a lot of medical care from time to time.
Stop. I don't want to hear
about issues like fibroids. We can handle this.
Oh my God.
Breast cancer screenings. Contraceptive care. That is the kind of work that happens here. In addition, of course, to abortion care.
Oh, yeah. And also at this Planned Parenthood mill, they do provide abortion care. Talk about an oxymoron. But yes, uterus needs some management.
Wait, real quick, unless something has changed, do they do breast cancer screening at Planned Parenthood now? Because I know sometimes they'd have a mobile unit come out for special occasions, but I didn't think that they did that there. So, but whatever.
Uh-huh.
It's her part of her beautiful eyes.
Uterus is one of those words that, you know, it's like moist.
Okay, please. Why you got to Dewey. Moist.
No, Dewey doesn't bother me as much. Well, those words that are sort of just cringeworthy. You just don't like the way they sound. What they... phallic. What about that? You like that word?
No, I don't, Dan.
Thanks
for playing.
I'm just trying to think of other words. I've got one.
What?
Kamala. Ooh. It's just a cringe.
And that, you know, the left-wing media is like making history as the first sitting vice president to visit an abortion clinic. Wow.
Yes, exactly.
Whoa.
Yeah,
the first presidential
uterus at an abortion clinic. It's very momentous.
Yeah,
it's... To your point about your question about all this business about, and they also perform abortions. That's 98% of what Planned Parenthood does. They do this whole, like, we throw condoms around a sixth grade classroom and we've provided sex education. So we're in the sex education, contraception, contraceptive business. Oh, and, you know, we also provide abortion care. 98% of what they do, it's where all the money's made. That's the purpose of this disgusting, ghoulish organization and business that Pritzker and the majority of this state likes to celebrate. Sorry, I can't go along with it.
And it got a little ghoulish, or I don't know what her point was here.
I have heard stories of and have met with women who had miscarriages in toilets. Women who were being denied emergency care because the health care providers there at an emergency room were afraid that because of the laws in their state that they could be criminalized, sent to prison for providing health care. So I'm here at this health care clinic to uplift the work that is happening in Minnesota as an example of what true leadership looks like.
A phlegm. That's another word I don't like. Phlegm.
Yeah, I don't like that word.
I'm sorry. I lost interest in what Kamala said her say.
Someone's going to go arrest people. Okay? Scan your plates if you enter a state where abortion is legal.
What about squirt? How about scab? I don't like that either.
Okay. Why are you trying to gross me out?
Bulbous.
It's such a Dan Proft word.
You think about that.
I mean, common spelling, yes, bulbous. Okay. Pussy. I hate the word pus.
Pus, yeah, I don't like that either. Gelatinous.
Another Dan Proft word.
Gelatinous. Peripatetic.
Oh, my.
Ooh,
okay,
that's
Dan,
really,
really.
That's really.
I think I had that on my spleen last week.
Okay. Anyway, going back, sorry for that tangent there. I just sort of had to go to a
safety, please.
Another dimension rather than listen to that. Right. Right. These are the fictional stories about healthcare providers that won't provide emergency care in an emergency situation. That's just a lie. It's very much on the order of the people in our prisons are moms who had to steal diapers for their or food for their babies. That's what all the prisons are. You know, the Safety Act arguments that were made. All our prisons are full up with moms stealing diapers for their children. Sure. And all the Planned Parenthood and all this is about making sure that women aren't dying in back alleys and dying while awaiting emergency care as some medical professional, you know, consults with the legal team as to what the state does and doesn't allow. It's just all fiction. I know it's fiction that a lot of daffy, overeducated broads in Hinsdale and River Forest believe, but it's fiction nonetheless. Robert in Bloomingdale.
Hey, how you doing, guys? Well, you know, I'm a Knights of Columbus member, and we were at the meeting yesterday, and it was mentioned about Kamala Harris going to the abortion clinic, and everybody was aghast, including me, because I didn't know that. But the reason I'm calling is I feel that abortion is wrong, of course, and these abortion clinics like Planned Parenthood should be put out of business immediately. That's my personal opinion. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Robert. Of course, the point of her being there is to put a spotlight on abortion because they want this election to be a referendum on abortion. A referendum on abortion and saving our democracy, but saving our democracy necessarily includes making sure that we have abortion on demand, no restraints, taxpayer funded, no age requirements, no parental notice requirements up until you're allowed to work out you're able to work outside the home, basically. That's their whole thing. That's what they want this election to be about. And of course, Republicans generally run scared on this because, well, so they're not very so many, not there are obviously exceptions, but the ones who run scared, and unfortunately, that's oftentimes the leadership of the party. They're not particularly thoughtful. They're not particularly talented in terms of messaging. They haven't thought this through. And also, they're lazy. I mean, ultimately, it's really a laziness to put in the time and to devote the mind share to make a cogent argument. You have to make arguments. Mm-hmm. You have to make arguments. You have to respond to the agitprop you hear from a Kamala Harris when she's prattling on about her uterus and so forth. You have to respond to that. You have to make a cogent argument about what you think is, you know, you can limit it to your personal belief. You can translate your personal belief to what is possible public policy, what is sensible, commonsensical public policy, where the consensus is in a particular state or even nationally. So, I mean, yeah, so you need to think this through because you need to articulate a position. I'm sure the Republican Party promote federal abortion a ban or federal abortion restrictions. No, I don't think it should. Some Republicans do. Some Republicans don't. But I don't think it should. I mean, that was the whole point of the Dobbs decision and over getting Roe v. Wade finally overturned is it was bad law. It's a matter that should be left to the states. That's what the pro-life movement fought for 50 years. They got it. So now you hash it out in Illinois, just like they do in Florida and Texas and Wisconsin, and you're going to have different states come to different conclusions. Well, and it continues to be a debate that has to be had, arguments that have to be made, and hearts and minds that have to be changed from the pro-life position if you want a culture in your community or state that is more respectful of life. That's just the reality on the ground. So let's acknowledge it and put in the effort.
Okay, but one of their campaign messages in Kamala, whatever you call her, repeated yesterday is that if you vote for Biden-Harris, we will restore Roe v. Wade. This is just simply not true.
Well, I mean, it could be true, I guess, if they depending on what the power power structure is. I mean, you have people that want to pack the Supreme Court.
Oh, well, that's true. Okay.
And you don't know, what the future holds for many of the justices on the court that are up there in age and what how many appointments the next president would nominations, I should say, the next president may have. I mean, who knows that? So the balance of the court changes, the composition of the court changes, the size of the court changes. I mean, you know, Roe v. Wade was never going to be overturned until it was. So you don't take nothing for granted. And they can, and so that's their claim. So now you know what their claim is. I don't think the response to that claim that we're going to restore Roe v. Wade is to say that's not possible. I think it's to say that's wrong. That I think there's agreement, or this is where we are, that this is a matter that should be hashed out at the state level, because opinion is so divided. The right that Harry Blackmun invented out of whole cloth as the basis for the Roe v. Wade decision is was an unconstitutional overreach. It's not there. So if it's not there, it's left to the states. So states figure it out. And in Illinois, again, if you want it to be the number one issue, the thing you most care about, like Jelly Belly Pritzker, and that's all you're interested in talking about, and that's the basis for your vote, and you want it unrestricted, you want 12-year-olds getting as many abortions as they so desire without telling mom or dad, medical provider, the abortion mill doesn't have to tell mom or dad either, and we're going to pay for it, and great. Well, then that's what you'll have, and that's what we have in Illinois. And Florida, Texas, other states, they're going to do a little bit differently. Abortion is the number one issue in the 2024 campaign. That's a quote from Jelly Belly Pritzker. That's what they want it to be. That's their only chance, they think. And it's, you know, sort of a save our democracy. But as I said, they're sort of folded in. And Juan Williams writing in The Hill about how fired up Democrats are about it. The interesting thing is I think some Republicans are starting to get the message that you can't run and hide because your opponent will chase you. Richard Hudson, who's a rep, he's the chair of the National Republican Congressional Committee, put out a memo that suggests that rather than trying to sidestep the issue like so many Republicans try to do, because they're for some reason they're afraid of these just nasty, ignorant, hard leftist suburban women, what honkies mainly. Rather than do that, you should confidently articulate your position. Being unwilling to stake out a clear position with the voters is the worst possible solution, reads the memo. He's exactly right. That's exactly right. Dodging and weaving is, I believe in, you know, personally this, but as a policy matter that, all these sort of mealy-mouthed, fork-tongued answers. You better figure out what you believe if you don't know. And frankly, if you don't know what you believe on this issue, as with many other issues, but including this one, then you shouldn't be running for a federal office or state office for that matter. If you haven't given these issues any thought, then don't run because you're not qualified to be there. You have to be a thinker. You have to think a little bit. And then as the NRCC memo says, then confidently put it out there and let's have a reasonable fact-based discussion on it. In fact, faith, you know, anything goes, but let's have a discussion about it. I want to run and hide. I'm afraid. Don't run. We don't need you. And this is the message that Republican leadership should have been telling prospective candidates rather than platforming candidates who are just as afraid as they are. And I'm specifically talking about Illinois there. Corey and Woodlawn, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning, Dan and Amy. You know, Kamala Harris reminds me of a Disney villain that's pretending to be good until she's not. Only she's out there prevaricating about the issues. I mean, I like our chances. I mean, this woman is just disconnected.
I agree. Thanks for the call, Corey. Yeah, there's definitely a... I mean, I'd say there's a Jekyll and Hyde quality to her, but I mean, I don't think she's very good at hiding the ugly side, you know? I think she just comes across as nakedly ambitious and
she's just not smart.
Wildly disingenuous and, not particularly bright either.
She didn't even make it to the Iowa caucuses because she was so unlikable.
Gabby Schomburg.
Good morning, guys. Happy Friday. She's a political pig, and I would have more respect for her if she went out there and screamed, "We need your fetuses," because they get tons of money from Planned Parenthood to the tune of $500 million annually on the backs of dead babies. Dead babies are big business for biotech companies and for the DNC. And I believe it was Denise Richards who was before in a Senate hearing, I forget why, some years ago, when she had to openly admit that they do not perform any mammograms. I challenge any woman to call a Planned Parenthood and see what kind of care you're going to get, and that's going to be an eye-opener. They just want to know about you and your fetus and how you're going to get rid of it. It's disgusting. And how that is in the forefront of a subject matter for this political party says it all. That's all I have to say. Thanks for listening to my rant. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Gabby. Yeah, don't forget David DeLayden's expose on Planned Parenthood, the Planned Parenthood mills around the country, and their trafficking in baby body parts. Of course, that went by the wayside. Republicans were a little sheepish. This was back in the heady Paul Ryan days. And David DeLayden ends up being the one prosecuted for, you know, surreptitious filming of these Planned Parenthood mills, trafficking in baby body parts, and Republicans can't even bring themselves to stop providing federal tax dollars to Planned Parenthood.
I'm looking at their service list right now. Abortion, birth control, emergency contraception, gender-affirming care, HIV services, mental health. Nothing on here about mammograms.
Yeah, it's all abortion all the time. Speaking of, you know, not paying attention to your kids, 21-year-old Olivia Rodrigo, I guess she's going to be the new Taylor Swift or something.
Yeah, she was at the White House last year with Biden.
Of course she is, because she's an abortion automaton, handing out free boxes of Plan B at her concerts during her Guts World Tour. Fans receiving condoms, information on how to fund abortion, and a phone number to get an abortion. She announced the Fund for Good initiative to provide many of her young fans with abortion access. Big abortion promoter, Olivia Rodrigo. But let's run away from her, too, because we're afraid. We're afraid of, you know, the women of Wilmette. Okay.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information. To start your day, it's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, President Biden get that bump coming out of his fiery State of the Union address that the Democrat Socialists had hoped?
Let me see. It was the best speech ever. He's just restarted his campaign. He is back.
Maybe with respect to the choir, but to the larger congregation, yeah, I don't think so, especially with this week's inflation numbers showing both on the consumer and the producer side, a little bit hotter than expected. They even had to bring out the person who used to host that Captain Kangaroo show, who's now the Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen. Uh-huh. She had to talk to the news again.
In 2021, you did say that inflation was transitory. Do you regret saying that now?
I regret saying it was transitory. It has come down, but I think transitory means a few weeks or months to most people, and that it's lasted longer than that.
Last year,
it has come down. Her voice cracked at just the most inopportune moment. It's tough to get that out, isn't it? And
Peter
expect
Brady.
That anybody's going to believe it. Yeah. So I mean, here's where we're at. By one calculation. Americans need about 20.5% more income than they had in January of 2021 to maintain their living standards. Need about a fifth more income than they had 3 years ago to maintain, to hold serve. Problem is, they don't have a fifth more income than they had 3 years ago. They have, well, wage, I mean, essentially, in the short term, we're actually seeing wage decreases. In the three-year term, so we're seeing wages start to decline. In the three-year term, your wages are running at less than half of what they need to maintain their January 2021 standard of living, which is why you're seeing an uptick in the number of Americans reporting a second job. You're seeing an uptick, 1 in 8 retirees that are considering going back to get a job. You're seeing a credit card debt climb 40% in the past 2 years to more than $1 trillion. For example, Discover's credit card customers are carrying $102 billion in balances on their cards. That's up 13% from last year. So you can give all the fiery speeches you want about January 6th and restoring Roe v. Wade. If you can't change the lives that Americans are living, these numbers, if you can't change that reality that Americans are facing, you got a major problem. For more on this and other topics, we're pleased to be joined, as always, by Brett Baer. Of course, he is the host of Special Report on Fox News, 5 p.m. Chicago time, weekdays. He is also the author of To Rescue the Constitution, George Washington and the Fragile American Experiment, as well as The History Club, Duel Across Time, a graphic novel. Brett, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Morning.
So, what is the I know there was enthusiasm and the Biden chants in and out of the State of the Union last week, but it seems like it has dissipated into the ether fairly quickly.
Yeah, I think you look at all the polls across the board and you don't see any indication that there was a bump, especially among independents. And that's really where President Biden and Vice President Harris need to move the needle to affect especially these swing state positions. And we have a long way to go. We have 7+ months. A lot can happen. A lot of shoes can drop. But it's starting to bake into the cake as you head into the summer that it's going to be a tight race. But right now, the former president is in pole position.
The TikTok legislation, I mean, this is, again, one of the many issues that's going to be kicked around. And I don't know that it's going to be, definitively impactful. But it is, TikTok does have 170 million users. So, I mean, that may be a little bit more than a blip. What is the prospect that it gets taken up in the Senate? Because Schumer seemed to be tepid on the topic.
I think it's possible. So far, you're right. Schumer is not indicating any gung-ho, let's get this passed. But if he puts it on the floor, I think it does get passed. And that's the question. I think, you know, you listen to the national security guys, and they're pretty adamant about the threat. But you listen to the free speech people and the people who are advocates. This is not the job of Congress, and they have a sense of that too. But they're not saying shut it down. They're saying divest from China. We wouldn't let China buy your radio station or buy Fox News. Mm-hmm. And yet they have access to 170 million Americans.
Wow. I want to get your reaction to what Alvin Bragg announced yesterday, that he supports delaying the hush money trial in Manhattan by 30 days because the feds just handed over some 31,000 records on Wednesday when they should have been delivered 15 days before the arraignment. So what do you make of this? Is this a good sign for Trump?
I mean, everything seems like it's being pushed back. And the real question is, will there be any trial before the election? And I can't answer that right now. I guess the Alvin Bragg, if this happens in 30 days, but it seems like with all those documents, you could make an argument that they need more time. So what the Trump lawyers are trying to do is to push him past the election and hope that he gets elected and then deal with the fallout from these state cases, after he's the 47th president to be.
Yeah, and on some of the other fronts, in terms of the Trump trials, in Georgia, of course, we're supposed to get the decision on Fannie Willis today, but I'd be surprised if the judge kept her on the case. I hope he keeps her on the case, actually, but I'd be surprised if he did. And so that almost assuredly pushes that past the election. And then Eileen Cannon in Florida, Judge Cannon, you know, she's saying some things about selective prosecution in her back and forth over some of the other claims that Trump has made to get the case dismissed, the records case dismissed in Florida. She's saying some things about selective prosecution, I think, particularly in light of the her report and her testimony this week, that I wonder if she won't go in the direction of dismissal of the charges in that case because of the seemingly unequal application of the law when it comes to classified documents.
Yeah, I mean, she didn't dismiss it outright. She had the chance to dismiss the trial. She did not do that. But she left open the case of hearing arguments on Presidential Records Act and the disparity in handling classified records cases differently. And obviously the Biden case is a perfect example, as we saw former special counsel Herr up on Capitol Hill this week.
Yeah. The state of affairs with the Senate Republican leadership, I know Mitch is going to move on after, or at least move off the leadership post after this election. How is that jockeying going? Because I think there's a lot of interest in who is going to take the reins, whether Republicans are still have a slim deficit or they are able to retake the majority, then it would be even more important. But a lot of jockeying going on, and I just wonder what your handle is on it.
Yeah, I think Senator John Thune is probably in the best spot. It was going to be one of the three Johns, John Thune, John Cornyn, John Barrasso. Barrasso pulled his name out. Cornyn hasn't said much. John Thune said he does want it. I think there'll be other challengers, maybe Rick Scott again, maybe Tom Cotton. But John Thune has a majority, I think, of the caucus. And Republicans are in a good spot, if you look at the map, heading into the election. They're positioned to pick up the needed seats to take over the majority.
Yeah, and I wonder, too, about depending on how those Senate races go, if you could have a sort of a conservative consensus candidate emerge, perhaps a Scott, that maybe some of the newly elected senators are going to be less likely to go with one of the old guard, particularly depending on where Steve Daines goes, given that he's the point man for the NRSC.
Yeah, I think Steve Daines is a dark horse. I mean, if he has an amazing election and he gets a large percentage of the guys and women up elected, I think he has a case to make or could be a kingmaker and get behind Thune. You know, Thune is like he is the establishment pick. However, he's, you know, sung from the Trump playbook a couple of times. So there is some interaction there. And obviously he looks like the Marlboro man.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, I know. Amy's got a bit
of
a crush on him.
Crush. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm honest about it, though.
That's fair. That's fair. The curious case of RFK's running mate. I mean, yeah. I don't think RFK has much of a chance to be the president, but he's definitely going to be impactful on the election, particularly if it's close, as you say. And he's going to make this announcement, and then Aaron Rodgers takes this smear job over at CNN because Aaron Rodgers is somehow on his short list. I don't know how he's going to manage the football season and the political season. But anyway, your take on RFK, a potential celebrity running mate, and then the smear job, that's how I would characterize it since there was no evidence, that CNN did on Aaron Rodgers, suggesting that he was promoting Sandy Hook conspiracy theories more than a decade ago at a Kentucky Derby event.
Yeah. So I think it was a crazy news cycle on that front. I know they're friends, and it seemed to me that RFK Jr. was just mentioning him, you know, out of the blue, not actually considering him, but saying, you know, he would be good. I almost took it like a tongue in cheek, like maybe I'll go with Aaron Rodgers. But because of that, the cycle of coverage, it became front and center. And then CNN, listen, I can't comment on what they say they heard at the Kentucky Derby. All I know is that Aaron Rodgers has denied saying it, and it's basically a he said, she said. I think it's kind of crazy. He is going to name his VP choice on the 26th, and I will tell you that some polls have him close to 20% now, you know, anywhere from 14 to 21. Remember, Ross Perot got 19% in 1992, and that cost George H.W. Bush the election.
Well, the Rodgers piece, though, too, he was on with Trace Gallagher on Fox, too, where he talked about Rodgers like he was already his running mate, which also fueled more speculation.
Yeah, I saw that interview, and I just don't think that he's the pick, but because it would be a real surprise to Woody Johnson and the Jets.
Yeah, I'd say, what about, although Tyrod Taylor would love it, Jesse the Body? I mean, honestly,
what's he been up to for the last 30 years?
He's fluffing his feather boas. So is there anybody anybody serious other than that?
Yeah, the VP pick is not, some great thing. It just creates a lot of drama and buzz.
Right.
Admiral Stockdale was Perot's, and remember that debate? You know, who am I? Why am I here? So I think that, you know, he's going to make this announcement in California. I don't know. Other picks, I think, you know, a Republican of some kind, is some kind of unity ticket, I think, is what he was going for. And but maybe the celebrity thing pops up. Somebody else said Tony Robbins. I don't think Tony Robbins is
Tony Robbins.
I don't.
Here's my pick.
Who?
He gets his wife, Cheryl Hines, to get Larry David to do it.
Oh. Was it Larry David or Bernie Sanders?
Huh? See how much fun this is?
This is good.
I mean, it'd be a great episode.
It'd be the best. It'd be so good. Brett Baer, host of Fox News Special Report, weekdays 5 p.m., best-selling author of To Rescue the Constitution, George Washington and the Fragile American Experiment, as well as the History Club Duel Across Time, which is a graphic novel. Brett, thank you as always.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Have a great weekend. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning Answer.
On AM 560, The Answer.
I'm starting to warm up to AI. That's artificial intelligence. Kamala Harris can explain it to you.
It's AI.
The A stands for artificial, and the I stands for intelligence, as I understand it from the VP. So when it produces things like this, I mean, how can you not love AI?
What?
Simon and Garfunkel singing
what?
Baby's Got Back and My Humps.
I like big butts, I cannot lie. You other brothers can't deny. When a girl walks in with an itty bitty waist and a round thing in your face, you get sprung, 'cause you notice that butt was stuffed. You pull up tough, deep in the jeans she's wearing. What you gonna do with all that junk? All that junk inside that trunk. I'ma get you drunk. Get you love drunk off my hump. What you gonna do with all that S&7 jeans? Gonna make you scream. My hum, my hum, my hum.
It's beautiful. I mean, it's beautiful.
It is awesome, but it's so scary.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. America First with Sebastian Gorka. Weekday afternoons at 3 on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So, Pagliacci Schumer took the Senate floor to continue to leverage the situation in the Middle East for political benefit domestically and to try to middle it, too, right? If you can't decry Israel the way that the Socialist Spice Girls want you to do, if you can't call it an apartheid state and say anti-Semitic things the way that Ilhan Omar or AOC or Rashida Tlaib is wont to do, then at least he can go after Netanyahu, because he's not a popular figure among the left. And so let's make it about him rather than about the Palestinians or the Israelis as a way to middle both Palestinian and Israeli voters here in America. And that's exactly what he did.
On the Israeli side, the U.S. government should demand that Israel conduct itself with a future two-state solution in mind. We should not be forced into a position of unequivocally supporting the actions of an Israeli government that include bigots who reject the idea of a Palestinian state.
Oh, bigots. Let's play some identity politics, huh? I hear what you're saying. I mean, I feel what you're doing. I'm picking up what you're putting down there, Chucky. So since we shouldn't be beholden to them, we should get rid of them.
5 months into this conflict, it is clear that Israelis need to take stock of the situation and ask, must we change course? At this critical juncture, I believe a new election is the only way to allow for a healthy and open decision-making process about the future of Israel. At a time when so many Israelis have lost their confidence in the vision and direction of their government. I also believe a majority of the Israeli public will recognize the need for change, and I believe that holding a new election, once the war starts to wind down, would give Israelis an opportunity to express their vision for the post-war future. Of course, the United States cannot dictate the outcome of an election, nor should we try. That is for the Israeli public to decide, a public that I believe understands better than anybody that Israel cannot hope to succeed as a pariah opposed by the rest of the world. As a democracy, Israel has the right to choose its own leaders, and we should let the chips fall where they may. But the important thing is that Israelis are given a choice. There needs to be a fresh debate about the future of Israel after October 7th. In my opinion, that is best accomplished by holding an election.
So we don't dictate the outcomes of their elections. We just dictate the timing. Is that what you're suggesting, Pagliacci? Obviously, he is suggesting that. That's why he was specific to say we don't dictate the outcomes, but you better hold one. Would there be purse strings attached to that, in your opinion, Chucky Schumer? The other thing, too, about that, Israel can't expect to survive, thrive as a pariah. Why would Israel be a pariah?
Very
Who said
bizarre.
Anything about Israel being a pariah state? I mean, it may be a pariah state to radical Islamic states that and non-state actors that seek its destruction, but that's already built in. Why would it be a pariah state? Because Western Europe is playing the same politics that you're playing there, Pagliacci? For more on that matter and a few other geopolitical issues, we're pleased to be joined by Daniel DePetris, fellow at Defense Priorities and a syndicated foreign affairs columnist at the Tribune, Chicago Tribune, that is, and Newsweek. Daniel DePetris, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Dan, Amy, thank you for having me this morning.
So I also don't think that with respect to Schumer's call for an Israeli election, I don't think his characterization of where Israelis are with the prosecution of the campaign against Hamas is exactly accurate. Bibi may not be wildly popular, but I think the posture of eradicating Hamas and not stopping until that job is done to everyone's satisfaction is fairly popular.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I think generally speaking, if you look at the recent surveys, Israelis across the political spectrum agree that Hamas needs to be destroyed to the extent that it can. I think the difference is basically how to do that, right? And you have, you know, some people even within Bibi Netanyahu's coalition who would prefer to have a more diplomatic approach, meaning, you know, get the hostages out first and then prosecute the war. And I think a lot of people are concerned that Bibi is prioritizing the destruction of Hamas over getting the remaining, you know, Israeli hostages out of Gaza. So I think that's where the main dispute lies, both within the government and outside of it.
What about the American hostages? Do we know if they're even still alive?
Yeah, we don't. I mean, supposedly we have about 6 or 7, I think is the count, American hostages still in Gaza. We have very few information coming from the administration about, you know, their well-being. You know, I can't sit here today and tell you they're alive or dead, but you know, we can only hope that they are alive. But you know, I think there's approximately 130, I believe, hostages left in Gaza, and at least 30 of them have been declared you know, dead one way or the other. So it's an issue that is very time sensitive, and I think, you know, Bibi knows that, and I think ultimately the administration knows that as well.
You can't listen to Schumer's call for an election in Israel and not focus on the domestic politics he's playing with it with respect to Muslims in Dearborn who lodged a protest vote against Biden in their primary in Michigan, with respect to the these radical, relentless protesters that show up at events for Joe Biden, that show up at a printing house for the New York Times, that you know, block traffic on the streets of major cities. So he's definitely attempting to address those political problems here, isn't he?
I think so. I mean, he's the top Democrat in the Senate, you know, and he's responsible for basically putting the thumb under, you know, trying to go the way the tide is turning. And right now, you have a lot of progressives, even centrist Democrats, who are not at all pleased with Netanyahu as a personality and as a leader and in terms of his policies. And I think Schumer understands that. And a lot of this is trying to keep his credibility, I think, within the Democratic Party. I think that's a big part of the reason he gave his speech the other day.
Brandon Carr is a Republican member of the FCC, the board of the FCC, Federal Communications Commission. And he weighed in the other night on Laura Ingraham's show about the TikTok legislation that passed the House and is pending in the Senate. And here's what he had to say. I want to get your reaction to it.
Yeah, look, there's a lot of concern, particularly on the right, whenever Congress does something these days that can be weaponized against them because we've been living that for so long. My job as a Republican on the FCC is to sound the alarm on anything that can be used for weaponization. Not only does this bill not give that authority to the president, it doesn't rely on that alone. There are 5 layers of constraints that have been put in here. 1, it cannot be used against any individual. 2, it only applies to entities that are controlled by a foreign adversary government, which is just China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea. 3, it's not enough that you're controlled by a foreign adversary, maybe it should be, you also have to separately have a finding of national security, and then there's additional process beyond that, and the remedy, again, is not a unilateral ban, it is a divestment. So this is a very targeted bill, smart legislation.
Smart legislation, Daniel?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, as somebody personally, I'm more of a libertarian. I'm in the Rand Paul school of thought here, where we tend to take things out of out of proportion and view like free speech issues as sort of a gateway for our adversaries to influence American political opinion. Obviously, the concern here is that the Chinese will use TikTok in some way to influence Americans during the election. But, you know, I would remind people that the Chinese have already been doing that, as have the Russians. You know, so it's not like this is some sort of new development. I mean, we know what the Chinese and the Russians are doing, and quite frankly, it's something that the U.S. leaders should prepare for, regardless of whether or not TikTok is divested or forced to sell to a non-Chinese entity. So I'm sort of within the school of thought where we need to kind of sit down and weigh these issues very without an emotional basis. Right now, there's a lot of emotion dominating this debate.
I wanted to move over to Haiti because obviously it's in a state of anarchy, but there's still Americans that are trapped there. Does the State Department have any idea how many Americans are there and how they're going to get them out? Because we don't want to turn this into another Afghanistan.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I can tell, we don't know the exact amount of Americans in Haiti. Part of that is because, of course, Americans who are in Haiti have to register with the government and make sure the government knows where they are for safety reasons. But the administration has essentially rushed additional security to the embassy in Port-au-Prince in two separate waves, twice this week, actually. So there's obviously a huge concern here that the embassy is under threat, and I think you put the nail on the head here. They understand, you know, the last thing they need in an election year is a catastrophe at another embassy in a third world country. So that's essentially it's preparatory work, and it's also trying to cover your bases and make sure that to the extent that you can, you know, guard U.S. property, they're doing that.
Well, I mean, the Canadians said no to helping out the French. Macron said no. So they're having this Kenyan army possibly come?
Yeah.
And how? What kind of craziness is that?
Yeah, the bottom line here is nobody wants to touch Haiti. You know, the administration has lobbied the Canadians to lead a kind of a multinational police force to get control of the situation. And the Canadians basically told us to, you know, walk away. We're not doing it. You're not doing it either, by the way, United States. So why you're asking us to do it? So Kenya is basically the country that has volunteered to lead this mission. And the problem, of course, is the Kenyans have not even started their deployment process yet. So it's the whole situation is just a mess, quite frankly. And, you know, the political situation is abysmal. You have 1 in 10 Haitians, 10% of the population, close to famine, and the gangs basically run the country at this point. That's where we are.
Yeah, as we found out yesterday from our friends down in Port-au-Prince, or normally down in Port-au-Prince, at Food for the Poor, that one gang leader that's getting so much attention,
Barbecue.
Who goes by the nickname Barbecue, was a former police officer down there, just to put an exclamation point on how chaotic things are. Daniel DePetris is a fellow at Defense Priorities and syndicated foreign affairs columnist at the Chicago Tribune and Newsweek. Daniel DePetris, thanks for joining us as always. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan, you got what you wanted. Fannie Willis is going to stay on the Trump election cases, but she has to get rid of her lover boy.
Yeah, we heard on the news. It's either her or it's him. Fannie Willis or Nathan Wade trying your case is the definition of a Hobson's choice. But no, I'm glad. She still has the issue of potentially trying to cure those charges that were dismissed, which could put the trial past November. But yeah, I think given the national spectacle she made of herself, that anything that happens in Fulton County now is going to be seen as fruit of the poisonous fawny. So I think she should have been removed from the case, and the the Fulton County District Attorney's Office should have been removed. I think that was the proper legal decision.
Yep.
But I'm happy. I'm happy that she's staying because it just puts a spotlight on how politicized this is. What else can you say about it?
And I just really hope she wears her dress backwards again.
She does have a certain sense of style.
She's got a mouth on her.
Ooh. I mean, I just hope those two can
survive,
rebuild
this.
What they once had.
Well, they say they're not dating anymore. Sure, they're not. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, what a silly heart I am. I just want them to be happy, and I know they had a lot of good times together, and maybe they can again.
But I just
that's what I'm really hoping for.
But it's embarrassing for prosecutors, a screw up by, if you bring charges and then a judge throws it out before you go to trial. That's not a good sign. But okay.
Well,
they threw out three of the charges against Trump. So,
yeah. All right. So on other matters, I do want to get to RuPaul, but we'll get to RuPaul when Chadwick Moore joins us. This is a story out of Elk Grove, California, but it could just as easily be Elk Grove, Illinois. Parents that are apoplectic over an elementary school teacher who set up an LGBTQ club for kids without telling the parents. Well, yeah, of course. What do the parents have to do with any of this? They get in the way of what the teachers want to do with their kids. This is no province for parents. But some of the parents disagreed and showed up to school board meetings to indicate as much. Let's hear from a couple here. Here is a dad named Kirk who addressed the school board about this development.
Now, it's bad enough that you've done this to post-pubescent teenagers with porn in libraries and public drag shows. But now we know there are secret rainbow clubs in at least one elementary school, possibly up to 10 of these elementary schools. On top of that, when a school principal was called out on this, less than a month later, there was magically a teacher training put on by the Youth Development Office to help teachers and staff respond to parents who may have a problem, just a small problem, with a stranger having secret sexual conversations with their 8-year-old. Now, I had some questions. I sent those to my son's principal and to the superintendent, and I did hear back, but those answers only created more questions. But I have a couple of different questions for the board. Number one, what the hell?
Love them.
And number two, what the hell? And I'm censoring myself, son. Now, I would have liked to have come here with serious, non-rhetorical questions about this issue, which in a normal world would have been an isolated incident of an overzealous school staff member. But at this point, I know any questions I would ask would fall on deaf ears. It's a clear trend now. This board has created a district culture where child sexualization isn't the exception. It's the rule. It's not just in high school anymore. It's in grade school. If this school board had existed in 2005, you'd all be the villains in an episode of Criminal Minds.
What a great line. If the school board, if you were doing this 20 years ago, you would all be, it would be a based on a true story episode of Criminal Minds. Yeah, I mean, he's not far off. Mom Mary also spoke to the school board.
The establishment of a gay club in elementary school raises concerns about age appropriateness. While fostering inclusivity is vital, it's crucial to evaluate the developmental readiness of our children's young minds for such discussions.
Well, you can't groom them if they're already matured. Dad Kyle.
While I understand the importance of providing a safe space for all, I am deeply troubled by the intentional deception regarding the UVU club.
Well, intentional deception is just what the left does. I mean, if they couldn't intentionally deceive, then they couldn't do anything. They couldn't do anything that they want to do, could they now? For more on this and other such topics, we're pleased to be joined by Chadwick Moore, New York Times bestselling author of Tucker, the biography of Tucker Carlson, also contributing editor at Spectator World, and you can find his musings at his Substack, Substack.com/@ChadwickMoore. Substack.com/@ChadwickMoore. Chadwick, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Great to be back with you.
Yeah, good to have you. So the Elk Grove, California situation, I mean, this is nothing new, but it is, I guess, extending down into lower grades. And I think it still comes as a surprise to a lot of parents. It certainly surprised those moms and dads you heard from, though, you know, I don't know why anybody would be surprised if you were paying attention these days.
That parent nailed it. What the hell?
Yeah,
elementary
right.
school? Why are you talking to elementary schools about gayness and elementary school students about sexuality and gayness and forming a club? Look, I don't remember what kind of clubs existed when I was in elementary school, maybe sports or other hobbies. There certainly weren't many social clubs, but that's even besides the point. I mean, it's grotesque. It seems like some people should at the very least be fired over this, but I'm not sure if that will happen.
People being fired out of, in a government school system? I mean, aren't you cute?
You're right. I wasn't. Yeah, exactly.
this accusation of grooming keeps being leveled, largely because it keeps being appropriate to level. But I mean, what's your sense of like gays against groomers and other sort of non-traditional allies with conservatives on this issue?
Well, it's I like those groups, and they're people who are they're gay people who absolutely realize that first of all, you know, there's no such thing as a gay child or a transgender child. These are prepubescent human beings that don't have a sexuality. So there's that. There's another, but I think the bigger issue at stake that these groups stand for is that they see that this sort of behavior from an extremely small, extremely twisted brand of their community. And I think it's probably not even a lot of gay people doing this. I think it's probably a lot of overzealous straight people who are forming these clubs. But they realize that it is bad for everyone, that it's playing into this old stereotype that gay people for decades and decades and decades fought against. Older gay people I know used to tell me that how hard they fought to get away from this stigma that all gay people are pedophiles. And those were, you know, hard-won battles that resulted in greater acceptance in gay marriage, et cetera. So you have these groups coming in now targeting children. It's taking us back. And these groups you have gay groups that are fighting against this because they see that. They see that it's hurting public opinion. For the first time ever, you have a drop in support for what they call LGBT rights in this country. Now, of course, right, the liberal media spins that as, well, that's because a bunch of MAGA hat people on the internet are all bigots. No, it's because of stories like this. This is why people were taking a step back and saying, wait a minute, what's really going on here? The whole love is love mantra that they used to preach about gay marriage is going a little too far, and it's only a matter of time before they want to add a P to the letter to the alphabet community, and you know what that stands
no.
for. No. You mean a map to the alphabet. But I mean,
minor attractive persons.
But the what the hell is a good question, just, you know, sort of visceral. Like, I mean, this just is so obviously beyond the pale. Do I really need to make that point? And you do, unfortunately. But a friend of mine has a good way of approaching this. She says, I just ask teachers like this woman in Elk Grove, California, who started this LGBTQ+++++ club and didn't apprise his parents. Why do you insist on talking about sex with my minor child? My minor son or my daughter. What is your? Why do you insist on talking about sex with my minor child, my minor son or daughter? I just think that's what how you put people, you know, in the crucible in government schools and at school board meetings. Just ask that question when you have something like this pop up, because you know they're not ready for that answer. I mean, they'll give you some sort of, I'm sure, sophistry about inclusiveness and being an ally and preventing othering and so, but I mean, it says it without saying it, what they're doing, you know?
Oh yeah. Well, my theory about drag queen story hour is that it's all, you know, with the drag queens with the libraries and whatever. I think it's all straight women who had a lot of gay friends when they were in college. They got married, they had kids, the gay friends don't want to hang out anymore. And so they, you know, they miss that. So they want to bring their kids in, and they want to pay a drag queen $50 to stumble out from his hangover to read a story. and then they feel like they're cool again. That's my whole theory on drag queen story.
Oh, interesting.
Does it seem like those have died down, though, recently, or are they just not being covered as much? I mean, we used to have, you know, drag queen bingo, but you shouldn't be yelling bingo in a library. And then, you know, people were following. It's like Alex, what was his name? Oh, I can't remember his name. Not Alex. What's that guy's name, Dan? Who started out at council meetings.
Oh, Alex Stein, Prime
Time Alex
Stein.
Like, he would be following that. Now it's kind of gone dormant.
Yeah, or you see, it seems like, because there were so many videos that came out that were so shocking about in bars where children were seeing drag queens very scantily clad and giving them money and whatnot. And maybe they have taken a step back, or we're just not hearing about it. It seems like maybe they've taken a step back, because I just don't even, I've never met a gay person who's on board with this stuff. I really can't figure it out. I understand that they think with gay clubs in schools, all them think, well, if I'd had something like that, maybe I would have hated myself less when I was growing up. Okay, I understand your reasoning on that. This is not how you approach it, but that's a completely different story of having kids in bars with drag queens performing in front of them.
Maybe it's just because Dylan Mulvaney is sucking up all the oxygen. He just released his latest video, Days of Girlhood, which is, you know, well produced. I wonder, yeah, you just yeah, all the attention is drawn to Dylan, maybe.
I like that. I think you might be onto something there.
Yeah, right. I had to get to this piece that you wrote at your Substack. I mean, you know, when you get cannibalized by your allies, right? RuPaul committed a faux pas with respect to this online bookstore he set up.
That's right. RuPaul set up an online bookstore promising to sell all books. And I do believe RuPaul, I've followed his career for a while, and I do believe he's of that older generation that believes in free expression. He rarely says hateful things about conservatives. He's not a very triggered person. I think that censorship deeply offends him. Now, of course, the reason why he would launch an online bookstore is because, you know, this banned books thing is in the news, that, oh, they're eliminating LGBT books from libraries. Well, actually, no, it's only straight-up pornography they're getting rid of public school libraries. So he does this bookstore, and then suddenly activists discover that he's selling some books by people they don't like. I mean, there's like 10 million titles on here. It's just sort of it's a marketplace that you know, sucks from Ingram Books or whatever.
Yeah.
So they throw a fit. It was books from people like Libs of TikTok, Kirk Cameron, who's the former child.
Oh, my gosh, Kirk Cameron. No, the kid from Growing Pains. That's the Antichrist, right? Yeah.
So they went after RuPaul, their elder statesman, and RuPaul, of course, relented, got rid of the books. But as I found, if you go on the website, you can still find plenty of books by Pat Robertson, Ann Coulter, Tucker Carlson. They don't have my book on there, unfortunately, but I think I'm going to write them and see if they'll include it. And but the whole thing with this banned book mythology the left has is so funny, because they forget that they were the ones that first started banning books from schools, and it was books like Huckleberry Finn, because it used antiquated language. Because whenever the left is exposed being tyrannical and gruesome and hideous, they have to try to spin it onto the right and say, no, you're the ones banning books. You're the censorship class, as if anyone believes that. And then something like this happens, and they just can't help themselves, and they have to attack poor RuPaul for selling books that they don't like.
And then the response to the attacks is to grovel, to apologize, and to say, oh, my gosh, you know, we thought we wanted a marketplace, but then now we realize what we're really supposed to be doing is platforming uncelebrated or underappreciated authors from marginalized communities, regardless of the quality of whatever their offerings are.
Right, yeah. We forgot our point isn't to sell books, it's to sell crappy books that nobody reads if they come from an author who ticks a certain number of boxes. And so that's, of course, it. RuPaul, though, I mean, something that they don't like to admit is RuPaul is such an aggressive capitalist. Again, if you sort of follow his career, I mean, he owns a ranch in Montana and he has fracking on it.
That's awesome. That's perfect. Yeah, yeah, right. RuPaul, the drag queen on the East Coast, and head of the Dutton Ranch on the in the Big Sky Country. That's awesome. That's so perfect. Oh, gosh. Chadwick Moore, New York Times bestselling author of Tucker, the biography of Tucker Carlson. Also a contributor at Spectator World and, again, his Substack, where you can get entertaining stories like this one on RuPaul. Substack.com/@Chadwick Moore. Chadwick, thanks as always.
Thank you.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to podcasts of Dan and Amy from the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Open mic! Open mic Friday! Call in now! Open mic Friday!
That's us. Means it's that theme music means it's time for our weekly Open Mic Friday segment, taking your calls, comments, criticisms, general crack pottery. We'll take it all. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. And we start, as we always do, with turnkey.pro founder, and turnkey.pro sponsors Open Mic Friday.
Yes.
Turnkey.pro founder David Kolsak joins us now. David,
good morning. How are you guys today?
Morning.
I had one of your listeners come by my office the other day, and his name was Bob, and he wanted to make sure he told you and the rest of the audience that he listens every day and loves it. So, hi, Bob.
Hello, Bob. Thank you, Bob. Yes.
I'd like to start out by talking about the economy, specifically our debt. I think we're something around $34 trillion in debt, and we're adding another $1 trillion every 100 days, according to Bank of America. On top of that, we've got $12 trillion in treasury bonds that come due this year. That means when you add it all up, we're going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of $49 trillion in debt soon, and that's $140,000 debt per person if you have a 350 million people. And yet my stockbroker says historically the market's rising in election year, and you know I should be fully vested in making sure that I'm invested in the stock market and long. So the problem I have is that I've got a significant case of cognitive dissonance. That is, I don't see what the experts see. I see a nation in a runaway border problem, inflation that's real. I mean, go buy milk and eggs and butter. A nation in crippling debt, BRICS nations moving away from the dollar, which devalues the dollar. I mean, just look at the valuations of our dollar versus other currencies, and you'll see the trend. And to add insult to injury, we're spending money on everywhere else but Americans. We give money to just about every cause in the world except for our own. And then you look at the promise that the Fed made regarding interest rate cuts this year. And remember that the Federal Reserve is no more part of the government than Federal Express. What's going to happen if they can't cut rates as promised? You know, but let's keep whistling by the graveyard and pretend nothing's happening. It just doesn't square with reality. I think Americans really want good roads and borders and good education devoid of perversion. I think Americans want what we once had. We're a far cry from baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, and Chevrolet. It's more like transgender golf, pink hair lattes, barbecue bug sandwiches, and Subarus. Certainly not as catchy as the original jingle, but anyway. So I don't view the world through the same lens as the people on Wall Street, or a lot of people for that matter. I wonder how long they can keep the markets up. My guess would be that they'll do everything to keep the stock market buoyed, just time to pass the crisis to the next administration. Or if they win, they get to handle it themselves. Let's see what they can hold on. It just looks intentional. Anyway, it's funny and sad how many of the policies that seem pretty commonsensical are being lauded as extreme, like protect every life, close the border, drill oil here, don't fight other people's wars, bring manufacturing back to America, have free and fair elections. Those seem like pretty basic positions that most people would agree with, but they're painted as extreme. Now we've got the opposite going on with the Biden administration. Look what they're doing. Instead of closing our border, they're actively flying hundreds of thousands of foreign nationals into the country and bringing bills forward that are $99 billion for foreign borders and $20 billion to help facilitate trafficking at our border. Instead of drilling oil here, they're saying, you know, we're going to tax your gasoline big time and buy an electric car. Instead of protecting every life, they make abortion legal up until the moment of birth. Instead of being, you know, staying out of other people's conflict, they're willing to start World War III for Ukraine, a country we have no right to claim. They also armed Afghanistan with $85 billion worth of military equipment while advocating to disarm the American people. And instead of free and fair elections, they charge and arrest their top political opponent. But it's okay, you know, at this time, I think just really, again, going back to the questions, you know, do you believe what you see on the evening news, or is it all just a narrative? Do you get fighting mad when people say 9/11 was an inside job, or do you agree with them? Do you think our elections matter, or do they just select people and make you think your vote counts? Do you believe what the science says, or have you lost confidence in science and medicine for that matter? Do you think we actually went to the moon in that aluminum foil piece of garbage, or do you believe them? You think that they're anti-vax people are just crazy, or are they the sane ones? You think that chemtrails are real, or are they just a stupid conspiracy theory? And do you like still think that our fiat dollar has value, or should we be using currency based on something of value like gold? And do you still think that Israel's our biggest ally, or are they just controlling us? You know, or again, the last question is, do you believe that we fight righteous wars, or do we just fight so the military-industrial complex can prosper while our best men die? The point is, I used to think a lot of things that I don't think anymore, and it's okay to admit when you're wrong. It's okay to ask questions and question the government. You know, there's a disturbing reality that many Americans have yet to accept, and that's the greatest threat to the American people is not in China, Russia, or Iran. It's in Washington, D.C. And once you start looking at it from that perspective, everything, you know, starts to make a lot more sense. So have a great St. Patrick's Day and go Boilers.
Did you? Oh yeah, Boilers against the Spartans at noon.
11 a.m.
11 a.m. I mean, yeah, right.
Are you going to the game?
No, I'm going to sit here in my office and have it on the TV while I do other things. But I'll try to watch for sure.
They'll beat Michigan State, but I'm telling you, Purdue still looks vulnerable to an early exit, depending on their draw.
You know what? I actually hope that they lose the first game and they're not dealing with any of that, and then they go to the tournament and take care of business there. Because I agree with you, they get tired out in this tournament. Everybody does. I mean, all these tournaments, they get tired out. They get to the big dance, and then they peter out. And I hope that doesn't happen, Dan. I'm hoping for a Final Four, at least an appearance. But we'll see. They're Boilers, so I'm used to it.
I just wanted one point of clarification. Did you throw golf in with the decline in America with like things like eating bugs? Did you include golf in that?
I did. I threw transgender golf in there. Yeah, I did.
Oh, transgender golf.
John Daly made fun of transgender golf.
Okay.
I didn't say golf in general. I think golf is great, but transgender golf, I'm against.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's acceptable.
I would never do that to you, Dan.
Okay.
Have a great day.
Thank you very much. Cheers. All right. All right. 312-642-5600 turnkey.pro answer line for this Open Mic Friday, taking your calls. Did you have anything you wanted to offer before we get to some calls?
You know, thanks, boss. Appreciate that, because today is the four-year anniversary from when Governor Pritzker announced that bars and restaurants will be closed. And Bill Gates, who, not a doctor, not an epidemiologist, just has money, spoke on a podcast recently, acting as if he never pushed masks. And he's laughing at you, all of you idiots who followed his lead, because he did tell people to wear masks, but now apparently he has COVID amnesia.
I don't remember talking about masks at all, but the two of you, you personally were using masks.
Yeah.
I remember you seemed like a really extreme case, because you would wear the full thing when you'd leave your apartment, and it was is he gone overboard? Is he germophobic?
Hope we've learned in the last year.
Yeah, I just don't think of wearing a mask as such a deep inconvenience. I mean, you know, we ask people to wear pants. Why was this politicized?
Early stage of the infection, we thought this was about coughing. We didn't know the simple masks would provide so much benefit. You get the message about masks to be a, you know, kind of bipartisan, let's protect other people type message.
No COVID amnesty ever, especially when they're laughing at you. Now it's funny. Does he have any idea what he did? Because he has money, he thinks he could just control things. What he did to our kids, and I just never forget, okay?
That is a classic, comparing wearing masks to wearing pants. That is a classic. But, I mean, this is from a guy who wants to reduce carbon emissions by cutting down millions of acres of trees and burying them.
Yeah, what an idiot. So, not a scientist.
Yeah.
This is a guy who's married who still wants to have a romantic weekend with his college friend, girlfriend.
Dawn in Naperville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
I just wanted to let everybody know that the Illinois Right to Life banquet tickets went on sale. It is Friday, May 10th. The featuring speaker is going to be Kirk Cameron, so that's exciting. But it's
banned at RuPaul's bookstore, yeah.
Oh, really? If you go to IllinoisRightToLife.org, you can purchase the tickets there. But on the issue of abortion, you know, I've never really understood people's stance at promoting it. You know, you hear people say, you know, love your neighbors, love yourself. But when you talk about what love really is and how God defines it, boy, do you really get to the issue, because he says it's patient, it's kind, it's not self-seeking. Love does not delight in evil, but it rejoices with the truth, and it always protects. So I don't understand why we're cowards to stand for the truth, because the truth, it results in human flourishing. The opposite of that is death, and that just places burden where it doesn't belong. And what God sees is a blessing, and we should treat it that way. And I just don't understand why people are cowards about the issue.
Thanks for the call, Dawn. Olivia Rodrigo is not a coward about the issue. This pop star mentioned a bit earlier when we were talking about Kamala Harris's uterus at that Planned Parenthood in Minnesota that she visited. Olivia Rodrigo, who I assume, you know, your teenage daughters are pulling at your apron strings to get them tickets to go to this concert, her concert and stuff, right?
Maybe you should stick with Taylor Swift.
Oh, me?
No, I'm at, well, I mean, oh. If she's handing out this stuff.
Well, here's Olivia Rodrigo launching her Fund for Good initiative to get her young, I assume mostly female fans, you know, abortions.
Hey guys, it's Olivia. I'm so excited that tonight is the very first show of the Guts World Tour. And before I pop on stage, I wanted to come on here and talk about something that I'm really excited about, which is the Fund for Good, which is an initiative that I'm launching as part of the Guts World Tour. The Fund for Good works to support all women, girls, and people seeking reproductive health freedom. The fund will directly support community-based nonprofits that champion things like girls' education, support reproductive rights, and prevent gender-based violence. A portion of all of the proceeds from the ticket sales of the Guts World Tour will go to the Fund for Good, which I'm very excited about. And for the North American leg of the Guts World Tour, I'll be partnering with the National Network of Abortion Funds to help those impacted by healthcare barriers in getting the reproductive care they deserve. To learn more about reproductive health resources and how you can help, visit abortionfunds.org. Or you can stop by the National Network of Abortion Funds table at your local Guts World Tour stop. So thank you so much for supporting this cause that I care so deeply about, and I can't wait to see you all on tour.
Yeah. Can't wait. So the devil doesn't come dressed up as the devil. He comes dressed up as Olivia Rodrigo. And it isn't interesting, per Dawn's point, Dawn from Naperville, talking about why are people so afraid to speak plainly about these matters? Yeah, because they want acceptance. They don't want pushback. They don't want to have to think about things that are unpleasant, like killing children. And you notice how they have to use euphemisms. They have to redefine in this area like they redefine everywhere else. Reproductive health freedom. She's handing out free boxes of Plan B at her, an abortifacient, yeah, at her concert.
Yeah.
So reproductive health freedom. So why did she use the word abortion? You know, when the name of the group, Abortion Access America or whatever, but it's right back to reproductive health freedom and reproductive health choices and reproductive care. Reproductive care. Ripping a child out of her mother's womb. Why don't you just call it what it is? Well, there's a reason why they don't call it what it is, because you're supposed to think of it in the abstract way, in an abstract way rather than a concrete way. So if your opponent is dealing in abstractions because they're afraid of the reality of what they're promoting, then maybe you should be talking about that reality in concrete terms. Cassia in Gage Park.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello, hello. Can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
So my name is Cassia. I'm a resident of Gage Park House that has been using as a shelter over 8 months. And we've been dealing with a lot of stuff over here. They finished with all the programs for the kids, especially for the special need kids. And the people that have been using this housing is just trashing everything and terrorizing the neighborhood. We've been having our packages stolen, cars has been broken,
indecencies, peeing everywhere here, and they just don't respect. And the use of drugs everywhere here, every corner you can find them. And the lack of security that we have, calling cops over and over again, nobody show up. We don't have nobody to stand for us.
Well, what are you guys going to do about it?
We are having a press conference this coming Sunday to expose all the situation that's being very ugly for us. You know, Gage Park is a neighborhood with middle class people that work very hard, and everything is being destroyed. Our store is being shutting down. Like right now, Dollar Tree that we had here on the corner on 55th and Western, it's closed over the robberies that they've been doing. Walgreens on the corner on 55th and Kedzie, after 6, 7 o'clock p.m., they have to put chains in their freezers because they're coming in, stealing liquors, whatever they need, and just walking past everybody.
You're saying the illegals are doing that?
Yes, the illegals are doing that. So we're hopeless, and nobody hear us. Nobody.
Is there any prospect that they're going to move those migrants, the people at the Gage Park house?
I don't think so.
No?
Because more people are coming, more and more. And Gage Park.
They're adding to the enrollment there.
Yeah, but still, I don't think they're going to be closing anytime soon.
Well, be loud, but do what the people outside of Amundsen Park did. In Portage Park.
Yes.
I mean, they brought up children. They're in their uniforms. Like, you've got to do a full court press right now. And it shouldn't just be one day. It should be every day.
Yes, but you know what? I'm trying to get my neighbors together to do this, to help me out, because I cannot do this alone, you know? Mm-hmm. It's a fight that everybody needs to come together. And people seem that don't see what's happening, you know?
So you're having problems getting neighbors involved?
Yes. I think people are scared. You know, they're scared over the way that they look at us, the entitlement that they have, that they own the streets.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like people doesn't want to mess with them, but they're messing with us. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't respect us at all.
Where are you from, sir?
Gage Park.
Were you born and raised here?
I'm sorry?
I said, were you born here?
No, I'm from Brazil. My name is Cássia. I'm from Brazil, and I immigrant as everybody else. Mm-hmm. But I think that what's happening right now, the advantage that they are taking, is too much. It's too much.
Cássia, thanks so
we
much.
Have,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Thank you so much. I'm just saying that before them, we had, you know, people that have been working hard, very hard, paying taxes. And they don't have the same help that those are having right now. And it's not fair.
Absolutely. No, I'm glad that you're standing up and speaking out and trying to organize your neighbors. Best of luck with that. It's unfortunate. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, it's right. Thank you so much for hearing me out.
God bless. And I'm so sorry you have to live like that.
And I'm sorry Amy called you sir.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sir?
Yes, yeah. I've been called sir. Many times.
Well,
I have a deep voice.
Yeah. Oh, right.
I'm sorry, ma'am.
Well, so somebody in Gage Park is trying to, you know, trying to lead the way. We'll see. You know, I don't know. As I said on Stuart Varney, the problem in Chicago is that the living dead, you know, most of the voters are dead from the neck up.
Yep.
And the fear factor she mentioned too. Well, yeah, sure. You see the city sanctioning people to run roughshod over your neighborhood, and you don't even get a police response when you call. I can understand where that would be frustrating and perhaps intimidating. Well, good. Best of luck to Cássia and then everybody else in Gage Park.
Well, also to my friends, the guy, this illegal from Gage Park, walked outside and took a pee-pee. He could have done it in the parkway. He could have done it. He did it right on her gate where you touch the knob to go into her house. Yeah, gross.
Well, you know, you hear the stories, but we have to remember.
I will note for our audience that overall crime is down this year across this country. And migrant crime is negligible. Crime by migrants is negligible.
Negligible. We've been talking about the negligible crime at the hands of people in this country illegally. I'm just telling you stories. Here's another one. Bill Malugin reporting, per DHS sources, the Haitian man arrested for raping a 15-year-old disabled girl at a migrant hotel in Massachusetts Wednesday came to the U.S. via the Biden administration's parole program for Haitians, which allowed him to fly into JFK Airport in New York City direct from Haiti in June of last year with a two-year parole grant. ICE now has filed a detainer on the 26-year-old with local authorities. The Biden administration's parole program allows up to 30,000 Cubans, Haitians, Nicaraguans, and Venezuelans to fly into the U.S. supposedly after they've been vetted and have a sponsor in the U.S. The recipients receive two-year humanitarian parole grants, which allow them to apply for work authorizations and live in the United States. According to CPB data, at least 138,000 Haitians have been brought to the U.S. since the start of the Biden administration's program a year and a half ago. Less than a year and a half ago, January of 23. And we know with the numbers of, we've talked about the numbers of Venezuelans and others, and it's not about any particular group. It's about the fact that the vetting is a joke. The app and using taxpayer dollars to be flying people in is a joke.
They're not even paying for their thousands of dollars worth of flights.
And to treat the incidence of migrant crime, to use the term negligible, when you're talking about a largely preventable crime with even the most sort of modest surface skimming type of vetting, that's an affront. But it's not an affront if people don't feel insulted and diminished like Cassia does. But a lot of people, you know, I mean, you don't hear that sort of, you don't hear what you heard from that woman in Gage Park emanating from Naperville or Downers Grove or the North Shore, which is why really the best thing to do would be, I don't know, see if we can't provide transport for Biden's buddies that are at the Gage Park house to, I don't know. There's got to be accommodations on the North Shore that you can, you know, seize, right? Public spaces, I don't know, front lawns. If it's good enough for Chicago, if it's good enough for Gage Park, why isn't good enough for the rest of these communities, particularly the wealthy honky communities in this sanctuary state called Illinois? Until there's that moment, something like James Meeks busing black kids up to New Trier High School, even though it was for the wrong policy. That moment of, you know, forcing a bit of a rendezvous with reality, if you will. I don't know. Greg in LaGrange.
Hey, good morning, guys. A couple things. On the anniversary of the lockdowns, being a Catholic, I have the capacity to forgive, but I'll never forget. And the people that are directly responsible, especially in light of the Kushner, Mike Pence, and the Deborah Birx revelations. Deborah Birx has been known for a long time, is absolutely sickening. They will never be confronted, or they'll never confront this as they should publicly and admit that they were wrong, because they're cowards. Which leads me to my second point about the state of this country and the leadership that represents it. I can think of no better example of some of the worst people in the world in the Senate than New York's Chuck Schumer and his doppelganger here, Dick Durbin. They are absolutely the worst people in the world, because they will never defend the U.S. citizen. They will always put their nose in somebody else's pot and dictate to them about how they should be doing things, but always casting a blind eye on the problems that they brought upon us in this country. The problems we have here are severe, and they run very deep. And let us hope that we never forget what and who did what to our children, our parents, our relatives, and those friends that we've had that have lost jobs because of a lot of the policies put in place by this administration. Never forget.
Thanks for the call, Greg. Jack, Northwest Indiana.
Morning, guys. I think, Dan, you had mentioned earlier that Pritzker's whole basis for the election is it's all based on what one will do with their uterus. I just recently came across an article buried in one of the news wires. I want to share it with you if you just bear with me here. But this is for Piper Sandler, one of sort of the investment houses. U.S. labor strength is increasingly concentrated in big states that saw COVID-related inbound population growth, economists say in a note citing Texas and Florida. The states that people fled, including California, Illinois, and New York, now face weaker economies. So nothing is mentioned. As you mentioned, we have a bunch of voters who really don't pay attention. The economy will continue to suffer. I just wonder, at what tipping point are we, days away, months, years away, when people start realizing that real issues, hard factual issues, are more important, and yet they vote with emotion. And I just don't understand how people can ignore their pocketbook, which used to be a big issue among voters.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Jack. Well, they get buffaloed by these demagogues. Speaking of cowardice, you know, intimidated by the shrillest members of their family or society. But the other thing, too, is I go back to this all the time. I mean, you also have no opposition party here. You have very few people, this show, Wire Points, Jeannie Ives, offering counterarguments. And the Republican Party is, the official Republican Party is nowhere to be found. Offering any arguments, throwing up candidates who mill about, and they may be well intended, and some may even be talented, but they're not going to be. They're not resources. Not going to be because the leadership is so feckless, and pathetic, and ignorant. So without an opposition party, I'm going to go with who's in power, because I'm sort of conditioned to do it. Because there may be a benefit to do it. You really have a one party state. I mean, we don't even have like a Steve Garvey running for Senate to at least be interesting,
right?
To at least have enough celebrity or cachet to have a platform where people will actually hear what he has to say. We don't even have that going. And I mean, Steve Garvey's going to lose 60-40, 65-35. California's a lost state. So is Illinois.
God, Senator Schiff. Ugh.
Dave in DeKalb.
Yeah, I just wanted to let you guys know that I thought that AI was a modern day college degree, and I'm just thanking you for straightening me out on that.
Yeah, well, you can thank the vice president. Christine, Palos Park.
Good morning. I'm a law student at UIC Law School. I'm a non-traditional student, which means I'm old. And my constitutional law professor last semester, our final exam questions, one of them was, Biden administration wants to increase the number of asylum seekers flying directly to the United States from Central America to avoid, quote, the humanitarian crisis of them traveling through Mexico, justify the increase in their asylum seeker program and allowing those migrants to come directly to the United States on the U.S. dollar. That was one question. There was another question asking for a judicial decision. There's no controversy, no actual issue, but in Arizona, hypothetically, which isn't hypothetical, there is a law stating that healthcare providers cannot write a prescription for the abortion pill unless they're an actual MD, and it has to have, the patients have to have two in-person visits 24 hours apart to that healthcare provider. And in addition, no abortion pills can be mailed into or out of the state, which prohibits, you know, abortion pill by mail to a woman who has only seen a healthcare provider virtually. And my argument to that when we discussed this in class was that these women who are in a crisis pregnancy situation, are not going to tell anybody that they're pregnant, are going to have a Zoom appointment with someone who doesn't know who they are, going to get an abortion pill by mail, they're going to have complications, they're going to bleed out, and they're going to die, and they're not going to call 911 for help, because then they would have to start at the very beginning, which is, I'm pregnant, and they didn't want to tell anybody that in the first place. And my professor, after this whole thing, looks at me and he says, well, just to be clear, some people don't believe it's a baby.
Right.
And I thought, really? That's the best argument, counter-argument you can come up with, is that I referred to the unborn child as a baby, not healthcare implications, the public policy implications. So that question on how to defend or how to rule on the Arizona law, how to make that, you know, overturn that law, was an exam question for our final exam. And I just wonder how many of these law professors are using these answers from their class in order to write policy, you know, suggestions to the legislature or briefs to the court.
Yeah.
And interesting. This is the education that we're giving to our law students.
Well,
at
right.
Law school.
Yeah, that was where I was going to go. It sounds like UIC is trying to be the incubator for lawyers to represent or work for Planned Parenthood and Catholic Charities.
Yep.
Thanks for the call, Christine. Appreciate it. The other Christine in Mount Greenwood.
Hi, I just wanted to invite everyone. I am in the Southside Irish Parade again with the Republicans. Sunday, we're number 103. We meet at 99th and Western. So that if you can all come out and walk with us to say we finally have had enough of the Democratic machine. We have great candidates. It's going to be a great afternoon, so please join us.
All right. Thank you.
Didn't you guys get kicked out last year because you were too loud?
Oh, sorry. I let Christine go.
But you should go. People should. Dan, you love parades.
Yeah, I do. And I understand there are going to be there may be some adult beverages there on the Southside Irish
Maybe.
Parade. Is that possible?
Remember that one year that they tried to ban adult beverages? That didn't last long.
Mm.
And then they
Chuck
shut it
Delavan.
Down for a few years.
Hey, thanks for mentioning my band, Intentional Deception, earlier. Hey, everybody get ready to sharpen your elbows to get into Foley's on Sunday for the big corned beef special. This is the fourth year anniversary. Thank you very much for letting me close your show, because I started exactly the same time calling you and being the last caller, and I really appreciate that. It's made me quite a star up here in Wisconsin. We overturned that on May the 14th with our Supreme Court up here, but you guys down in Illinois continue to be locked down for two more years while your governor was sitting and having ribs over at Mars. So you guys get out, have a happy St. Patrick's Day, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, right. Chuck.
Thanks,
you're a star Chuck. Before us, Chuck.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.